Welcome to Condor Currents, where we flow through the latest in computer architecture research and RISC-V innovation. I'm Ty Garibay, president of Condor Computing. This episode is brought to you by Condor Computing Minus High Performance RISC-V Processor IP from Andes Technology, the world's leading RISC-V processor IP provider with 30% market share and over 12 billion SoCs shipped. Learn more at condorcomputing.com. Today, we've got a fascinating mix on the table, RISC-V vector extensions making their way into quantum computing control systems, a deep quantitative dive into how AI inference, economics, and memory scarcity are about to reshape the entire industry, and some news on RISC-V vector extensions for AI+, a surprising development out of China where an all-CPU supercomputer just topped the rankings. Let's dive in. All right, first up, we're looking at a paper out of Archive titled Vectorizing Quantum Control, a RISC-V Vector Extension Architecture for Scalable Qubit Systems from Siering Guo, Kun Chin, Yanbin Chen, and colleagues.
And I have to say, this one caught my eye immediately because it sits right at this fascinating intersection of classical computer architecture and quantum computing, two worlds that are increasingly having to talk to each other. So let's set the stage. In a quantum computing system, you've got your qubits, the quantum mechanical bits that actually do the quantum computation, but those qubits don't just magically know what to do. You need control electronics to drive them, to apply gates, to read out measurements, to handle all that real-time feedback. And sitting between your high-level quantum programming environment and those control electronics is something called the quantum control processor. Or QCP, think of it like the executive assistant of your quantum computer. It takes the compiled quantum program and translates it into precise timed electrical signals that actually manipulate the qubits. Now, here's the problem that Guo and colleagues are tackling. Existing QCP designs are almost universally built around completely custom instruction sets. Every vendor, every research group rolls their own instruction set architecture.
And if you've been in the processor world for any length of time, you know exactly what that means. You have to build your entire tool chain from scratch. Your assembler, your compiler, your debugger, your simulator, all of it. Every time, that's an enormous amount of duplicated engineering effort, and it creates these isolated islands of tooling that can't talk to each other. So the key insight in this paper is, hey, we already have a fantastic, open, extensible instruction set architecture in RISC-V. What if we extended the RISC-V vector extension to handle qubit control? And this is where it gets really clever from an architecture standpoint. The RISC-V vector extension, RVV, if you're familiar with the acronym, was designed around the idea of operating on wide vectors of data elements in parallel. You load up a vector register with many data elements, you operate on all of them simultaneously, and you get massive throughput improvements for data parallel workloads. Now think about what quantum control looks like.
You've got potentially hundreds of qubits, and in many quantum algorithms, you need to apply the same gate operation to many qubits simultaneously or in rapid sequence. That is fundamentally a data parallel problem. The paper reports that their architecture can address 128 qubits with a single instruction. One instruction, let that sink in. Instead of looping through 128 individual qubit control operations, you express the whole thing as a vector operation. That's a dramatic simplification of both the hardware and the software. From a computer architecture perspective, what's exciting here is the extensibility story. RISC-V was designed from the ground up to be extended. You have standard reserved encoding space for custom instructions, and the vector extension has this elegant length-agnostic programming model, where the software doesn't have to know exactly how wide the underlying hardware vector registers are. That makes it a natural fit for quantum systems where the number of qubits you're controlling might vary from system to system. The real payoff is that by building on RISC-V, you immediately inherit the entire RISC-V software ecosystem.
Compilers, debuggers, simulation frameworks, things that the open source community and companies like Andes Technology have spent years building and refining. You don't have to reinvent that wheel. That's the beauty of open standards, and it's something we think about a lot at Condor Computing when we're designing processor IP. The work you put into the ecosystem multiplies across every application domain, and apparently that now includes quantum computing. This paper is a great example of how RISC-V's extensibility isn't just theoretical. It's being put to work in domains that the original architects probably didn't fully anticipate. Quantum control processors are going to need to scale as qubit counts go from hundreds to thousands and beyond. And having a principled standard-based architectural foundation is going to matter a lot. Really cool work. Check the show notes for a link to the full paper. Okay, shifting gears quite a bit now.
Our second paper is titled Memory Scarcity, Open Models, and the Restructuring of the AI Industry 2026 to 2030, minus a quantitative scenario analysis of inference economics,
training cost divergence and infrastructure solvency. This one is from Satoshi Matsuoka and colleagues, and it is a tour de force of quantitative economic analysis applied to the AI compute landscape. And while it's not strictly a computer architecture paper, I think the implications for hardware architects are profound and honestly a little sobering. So let me set up the core framework. The paper identifies four major forces that it argues will restructure the AI industry between now and 2030. First, a significant surge in DRAM and HBM prices. Second, the emergence of frontier-capable open-weight models. They use GLM 5.2 as their example. Third, rapid gains in inference efficiency, specifically near what they call Shannon limit KV cache compression and lightweight local runtimes. And fourth, major players like Meta and xAI entering the compute resale market using fleets they purchased before this memory repricing event hit.
Now, let's unpack why memory pricing is the central villain in this story, because I think this is the part that hardware architects really need to internalize. Modern large language model inference is almost entirely memory bandwidth bound. When you're running a big transform model into code mode, that's the phase where it's generating tokens one by one, minus the limiting factor isn't your floating point compute. It's how fast you can shuttle model weights from memory to your compute units. Your expensive AI accelerator chips are often sitting there waiting for data. The paper formalizes this with a really elegant metric, MIDA per petabyte of bandwidth delivered. And the insight is that because inference is bandwidth bound, this metric is essentially model agnostic. It doesn't matter too much which model you're running. The fundamental economics are the same you're paying for bandwidth delivered. This is a beautiful abstraction from an architectural standpoint. It lets you reason about the economics without getting lost in the specifics of any particular model. So what happens when HBM prices surge?
Your cost per petabyte of bandwidth goes up dramatically, and suddenly the economics of running large-scale AI inference get a lot tighter. The paper argues this creates a real solvency problem for some infrastructure operators, particularly those who built their business plans around the assumption that memory costs would continue falling or stay flat. Now, here's where open weight models and inference efficiency enter the picture and things get really interesting. If you have a frontier-capable model whose weights are open, then the inference efficiency community can go to work on it. And the paper highlights near Shannon limit KV cache compression as a game changer. The KV cache is a chunk of memory that stores intermediate computation results, so you don't have to recompute them in large inference deployments. It can be enormous. If you can compress it close to the theoretical limit, you dramatically reduce your memory pressure from a chip architecture standpoint. This is a call to action.
The systems that win in this environment are going to be the ones that deliver the most bandwidth per dollar, the most compute per watt. And that can exploit these algorithmic compression techniques in hardware. It also suggests that the era of just throwing more HBM at the problem may be coming to an end, and that architectural innovation, smarter memory hierarchies, better on-chip bandwidth, perhaps near-memory compute is going to matter more and more. The scenario analysis in this paper is genuinely thought-provoking for anyone building silicon or designing processor architectures for AI workloads. The fundamental message is that the AI compute landscape is about to go through a pretty significant restructuring driven by memory economics, and the hardware architects who understand those economics deeply are going to be better positioned to build the right systems. Really worth reading. Link in the show notes. Now let's move over to the news.
First up, from Quantum Zeitgeist, RISC-V vector engine addresses 128 qubits with one instruction. And yes, this is closely related to the archive paper we just discussed. It's essentially the news coverage of that research, so I'll keep this one a bit tighter since we already went deep on the technical side. But I do want to step back and talk about what this news story represents at a higher level, because I think the headline itself is doing a lot of work. RISC-V vector engine addresses 128 qubits with one instruction. That's not just a technical achievement, that's a statement about architectural philosophy. The fact that this is news, the fact that it's getting coverage in the quantum computing press, tells us something important. The quantum computing community is paying attention to what classical computer architects have been building. For years, quantum computing hardware has been developed in relative isolation from the mainstream processor industry. Custom electronics, custom control systems, custom everything. And that made sense early on when the field was still figuring out the basics.
But now, qubit counts are scaling up. Quantum error correction is becoming a real engineering challenge rather than just a theoretical one. And suddenly, the quantum hardware community is realizing that they need the same things that classical processor designers figured out decades ago, standardized IS as reusable tool chains, formal verification methods, scalable control architectures. RISC-V is uniquely positioned to serve this need because of its extensibility and its open nature.
You don't need a license fee or a commercial agreement to use RISC-V as your base ISA. You just use it, extend it for your domain, and plug into the existing ecosystem. That openness is genuinely enabling research and engineering work that would have been much harder with a proprietary architecture. This is exactly the kind of cross-domain innovation that makes the RISC-V ecosystem so exciting to be part of. I'll also note that the vector angle here is particularly the RISC-V vector extension has been getting a lot of traction across multiple domains: AI inference, signal processing, scientific computing, and now quantum control.
That's a testament to how well-designed RVV is as a programming model. When the same extension can address such diverse use cases, you know, the architects got the abstraction, right? Next up, from John Petty Research, the RISC-V vector extensions for AI. John Petty Research is a well-respected market analysis firm in the graphics and compute space. So when they're writing about RISC-V vector extensions for AI, it tells you that RISC-V is firmly in the mainstream conversation for AI hardware acceleration. The core story here is that RISC-V vector extensions, particularly RVV 1.0, which became a ratified standard, are increasingly being adopted as the basis for AI accelerator designs. And this is a trend that has been building for a while, but is really hitting an inflection point. The combination of the open standard, the extensibility that lets you add custom AI operations, and the growing software ecosystem is making RISC-V a very compelling foundation for custom AI silicon. Think about what a chip designer faces when they want to build a custom AI accelerator.
You need a controller core that handles the non-compute intensive parts of the workload. You need your specialized AI compute engines, and you need a way to program all of it that your customers can actually use. If you build your controller around RISC-V with vector extensions, you immediately get compiler support, you get operating system support, you get debug tools, you get all the infrastructure that makes a processor actually usable in the real world. The alternative, rolling your own ISA like the QCP world has been doing, means building all of that from scratch. The total cost of custom ISA development is frequently underestimated by teams who are excited about their novel architectural ideas. The compiler alone can be a multi-year engineering project. RISC-V sidesteps all of that. And the vector extension specifically is increasingly the right vehicle for expressing the data parallel, throughput-oriented compute patterns that AI workloads demand from Condor Computing's perspective. This is very much the world we're living and breathing. Our processor IP
through Andy's technology is already in AI applications. And we see firsthand how the vector capabilities map onto real workloads. The trend John Petty is identifying is real, and it's accelerating. RISC-V isn't just a research curiosity for AI. It's becoming serious production silicon. The customization story is also worth highlighting. One thing that makes RISC-V vector extensions particularly attractive for AI is that you can layer your own custom instructions on top of the standard vector framework. So you get the portability and ecosystem benefits of the standard extension, plus the performance benefits of your custom compute engines. That's a best of both worlds proposition that proprietary ISAs simply can't match. And finally, from China Daily, China's Lineshine top supercomputer ranking with all CPU architecture. Now, this is a genuinely surprising development, and I think it deserves careful attention from the architecture community. The story is that a system called Lineshine has topped the supercomputer rankings, and the remarkable thing is that it does so with an all CPU architecture, no GPUs, no AI accelerators, no specialized matrix engines,
just CPUs. In an era where basically every top supercomputer has been dominated by GPU-based architectures, this is a significant statement. Now, let me be clear about what we know and what we don't from the reporting. China Daily is a state-affiliated publication, so we should read any reporting about Chinese technology achievements with appropriate calibration. The details about what CPUs, what interconnect, what memory system are somewhat limited in the coverage, but the architectural claim all CPU is interesting regardless of the exact performance numbers. Why would you build an all CPU supercomputer in 2025? There are a few possible answers. One is programmability. GPUs are incredibly powerful for certain workloads, but they're genuinely painful to program for general scientific computing. A lot of traditional HPC workloads, climate modeling, molecular dynamics, computational fluid dynamics, have irregular memory access patterns and control flow that doesn't map efficiently onto GPU architectures. CPUs with wide vector units and large cache hierarchies can sometimes be more efficient for these workloads than people expect.
Another possible answer is supply chain and geopolitical considerations. China has faced significant restrictions on access to high-end GPU hardware through export controls. Building a world-class supercomputer using domestic CPU technology
is both a practical response to those constraints and a powerful demonstration of domestic chip design capability. If this system is based on domestic Chinese CPU designs, which seems likely given the context, that's a significant engineering achievement regardless of where it lands in the rankings. From a computer architecture perspective, the all CPU angle raises interesting questions about the right architecture for different HPC workloads. The industry has perhaps overcorrected toward GPU-centric thinking, driven in large part by the AI training workload, which genuinely is ideally suited to GPU-style architectures. But not every important computation looks like training a neural network. Climate science, plasma physics simulation, structural analysis, these workloads have different characteristics, and the optimal architecture for them might look more CPU-like than the current GPU orthodoxy would suggest.
It also makes me think about where RISC-V fits in the HPC space. RISC-V processors with rich vector extensions and high single-thread performance are increasingly viable for HPC workloads. The open nature of the ISA makes it attractive for countries and institutions that want architectural independence. This Lineshine story, whatever the full details turn out to be, is a reminder that the supercomputing landscape is more diverse and dynamic than the GPU-centric narrative sometimes suggests. All right, that's our show for today. We covered RISC-V vector extensions making a bold move into quantum control systems with the ability to address 128 qubits in a single instruction, a sobering but fascinating quantitative analysis of how memory economics are about to reshape the AI infrastructure industry between now and 2030, RISC-V vector extensions gaining real traction in AI silicon, and China's surprising all-CPU supercomputer topping the rankings. There's a lot happening out there, and it's a genuinely exciting time to be in this field. Condor Currents, brought to you by Condor Computing Minus, part of Andes Technologies' RISC-V processor IP portfolio.
If you found today's episode useful, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps the show grow. And tune in tomorrow where we'll be diving into more cutting-edge computer architecture research and the latest RISC-V developments. Until then, keep building.